Blog Talk Radio.
Today, you can start to claim the life you are meant to have. I'm your host, Reverend Deborah E. Lake, here to share my 12 principles to help you be all the way in your life. Clear your mind. Open your heart and join me. You'll be glad you did. This is All the Way In. I'm your host, Deborah E. Lake, and today is Friday, October the 2nd. I'm recording live from Chicago. It's 6:30 p.m. Central Standard Time, and I've got a very important show for you this evening. If you are a mother, father, sister, brother, uncle, friend, aunt, grandmother, grandfather, if you care about men tonight, you don't want to miss this show. Tonight, you want to call everyone you know and tell them to listen. My guest and I will talk about male-on-male rape. To my listeners, this is a difficult topic. You will hear about some startling statistics and disturbing experiences. And this will be just the tip of the iceberg. You see, data from a survey conducted by the National Violence Against Women suggests that at least 90,000 men are raped annually. Another study from the Human Rights Watch suggests even higher rates within the prison system. At least 140,000 inmates are raped each year. Other studies reveal that 71% of male survivors reported being raped the first time before their 18th birthday. That's before their 18th birthday. 17% of male survivors reported being raped the first time when they were between the ages of 18 and 24. These are startling statistics. And while I was reading and preparing for this show, I could not help but wonder why we're not talking about this topic more. Why are we not protecting our boys like we are girls? Why are we allowing the music industry and the film industry and the advertising industry and all the other money-generating industries? Why are we allowing them, sitting by silently, allowing them to give our boys the message that to be a man, to be strong, to be virile, they have to be sexual? Why are we doing that? I have a guest that's here to talk about his experience. But before we get into that, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back.
I didn't know my son was gay. I found out after he told me he had AIDS. I'm a good mother. I love my son. But being gay goes against everything I believe in. I was too ashamed to talk to anyone about this. I was angry. I blamed him for bringing this on himself. I blamed him for embarrassing me and my family. His doctor gave me a copy of Your Neighbor Has AIDS. I still struggle some, but at least now I can be a mother to my baby because he needs me now more than ever.
If you want help coping with a loved one's HIV status, get Your Neighbor Has AIDS by Deborah E. Lake. Available now for $17.95 at deborahelake.com. Amazon.com or BordersBooks.com.
Hi, Edward. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
First, I want to thank you for being here, and we've had a little bit of technical difficulty, and I'm sure our listeners who like to listen live were waiting for us, and I apologize for that, but we're here now, right? I'd like to start by just telling, have you just share whatever you're comfortable sharing with our listeners, and we'll go from there.
Okay. Well, how about I get a little bit of, I know what the show is about, but how about I get off a little bit of a lead off of where we're at now, since I know we're already into the show. So basically, where are you at as far as with questions, or if you have any questions, and then I can go from there.
Well, one of the things that I started out with as far as the statistics of what the likelihood is of people who are male and who are going to would experience rape and things like that. So it was just the intro, that's all. So whatever you'd like to share would be great.
Okay. Well, from my personal standpoint, even before the actual male rape occurred in my life, which did occur in my very early 20s, prior to that, I had also dealt with things such as what we know today as incest in the family. So I didn't, of course, know what it was at that time because I was even younger in my adolescence. But coming of age, I, of course, recognized, like, oh, wow, you know, you have flashbacks, you think about things, and it's like, okay, this is what that instance or what that episode was. Because back then, or as it was occurring, it didn't seem like that. But that's why, I guess, why it occurs when, you know, people are young children, practically, because I believe around that time I was maybe around 7 or 10. I know I wasn't older than 11. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
That's one of the data that we have here is that, like, 71% of male survivors report being raped the first time before their 18th birthday. And the 17% are, like, 18 to 24. So it happens when you're very young, you're right, just like before you even know who you are. Yeah.
Right, absolutely. And for me, that's pretty much, like I said, in my adolescence, it did occur to me that, you know, you don't think about people that say they love you doing something that turns out to be so wrong. And when you think about it, it's like, oh, my God, I have been robbed of a sense of my innocence because I was totally taken advantage of. I guess to say when I'm older, you are more aware of what's going on. And so when something in that instance occurs, it's not like your instincts aren't up, but it's like, oh, my God, here we go again. And sometimes you're even powerless in that, especially in the occasion of a male rape. People, again, don't hear about those instances, but they are out there and they're very real. I just happen to be fortunate enough to survive mine and to move forward from it rather than getting stuck in the period.
Yeah.
I can't say that when it first happened, I did blame myself. I felt very much, I guess, the flip side of a female. I blamed myself. Maybe I was in the wrong place at the wrong time, and I placed myself in that instance, or I trusted someone that I thought I knew, but apparently I didn't know, because how could someone that you know do something so very wrong? Mm-hmm. And you see it on TV, you hear it about it in the movies, you know, no is no, and it's no all the way around.
Mm-hmm.
But when someone forces or physically makes you do something, it's just like, oh, my God, your life is on the line.
Yeah, and that's one of the things I wanted to talk with you about as far as misconceptions, because there are a lot of misconceptions around rape in general, but even more, I think, from what I've done with my research, but even more around male rapes, men who are raped. For instance, one of the misconceptions that we have is men can't be raped. They're too big, they're too strong, and on top of that, guys like to have sex. You know, they're wired to have sex with as many people as possible. And I think one of the things you touched on, right, just with your story right there toward the end, is feeling as though there was something that you did, or, you know, how did this happen to me kind of thing. So, you know, any other misconceptions? What do you think about that one in particular, where men can't be raped?
Well, and you're absolutely right. A lot of times you're thinking, oh, that's the man. How could he be raped? Well, there's always I was raised this way, and I totally believe there's always someone bigger, badder, and better.
Yeah.
To a degree. You know, it only takes a matter of a moment to be thrown off guard, and to be thrown off guard means you are off guard. You're not aware that something even in the lurks may be happening.
Mm-hmm.
But until that a situation occurs, you're like, oh, my God. And you do kind of go through a mental freak out. I totally would think that when women say they were raped and they kind of like just it shocked them, you go through a mental shock. And, yes, sometimes your body, in my case, I went into a defense mechanism. But, again, if someone is bigger and more powerful than you and you're thrown off guard, no matter what you do sometimes, if you can't get out of that situation, it's going to lead to what it's going to lead to.
Exactly. And that I think that leads to another misconception that we have, and that's rape is about someone who wants to have sex.
Right. And you just brought up a very valid point. Some people would probably say, oh, men are designed to have sex. Well, there's a difference between having sex and being raped.
Exactly. Yeah.
You know, you can enjoy something and you say no but mean consensually yes, but when you physically and totally mentally and physically mean no and someone enters you and breaks you, that no matter how you see it, that's force. That's
mm-hmm.
not just sex. That's violation. It
exactly.
goes beyond just sex.
And that's what rape is about. It's about violating another person. It's about being dominating another person to the point of just awful type of way of being. It has nothing to do with sex.
It has completely nothing to do, at least not on the victim's end. You know, the rapist may be going through some kind of sexual thrill or conquest or however you want to term it, but the other end of the victim, they're being violated. There is nothing sexual going on. Their body is being physically taken against their will.
And that's what turns the rapist on. That's why.
Exactly. Overpowering that whole barrier. And it's really sad whether it occurs at a young age or an older age, it still occurs. And depending on where you're at, no matter how you see it, it still can be very traumatic. And for most men, they do. We do go into hiding. We never discuss it. You know, it's something that, oh, my God, how will I be looked at for a lot of us? And I won't say I totally did that, but I did go into reclusion as far as blaming myself.
Mm-hmm.
And at that time, for me, my support was there a little bit, but mentally I still went through that self-blame. Was I there? Did I ask for it? Was I wearing? I mean, I'm a guy, but, you know, was I wearing something inappropriate? You know, did I walk differently? What gave this person the idea that I wanted them to physically violate my body?
Yeah, and as a society, I think that people, individuals in the society, do the same thing. Well, why were you there? What were you doing there? You know, you should have known better than to go to your car at night with nobody but yourself, kind of thing. So we all go through that phase of what some people call blaming the victim. You know, there's something you could have done to avoid the situation or avoid the person or recognize that you're in danger. When we forget that typically people rape over and over and over, and they get better as they do it. And that's how they succeed in catching you off guard and tricking you and leading you down a path that you don't know you're down until it's too late to turn around.
Absolutely. Completely, absolutely. And I don't think it makes any difference, or for me it doesn't make any difference, where if someone says, oh, well, you knew that person, or was this a date rape, or, what did you do? You know, rape is still rape. No matter if you were on a date or you were in someone's house that you thought was a friend or however it occurred, when someone violates you, it's still a violation, period.
Exactly. Well, so why do you think we don't talk about this? You know, one of the things that we don't do, I see it all the time. We teach our young boys, and I'm going to say they're boys because they are. They're not men. We teach our young boys how to be thugs, how to go out there and be hard. And we don't really do a lot to do to protect and to teach our sons and boys about the vulnerability. They're vulnerable in ways. So why do you think we don't talk about it? Why do you think
I would think it just goes back to upbringing. It's a shameful situation. Even going back to the incestual kinds of rape. people can know in the family that it occurs but will never talk about it because for shame they don't want to see themselves as society look down upon their family or their family name, or if it's a higher position or if you are a middle age, not a middle age, but a blue collar or higher family income level, you know, it's something that how dare that be even discussed about, even though it's already known. I hear it's in the movies, it's in books. Oh, uncles and aunts and all of that, you know, they talk about it, how it occurred in generations, and they know this person is doing it, but no one does anything physically or just to stop it from occurring. And it goes on and on and on. Like I said, when I was 7, I didn't think that's what this was, but here and behold, that's what it was. And I don't think we, like I said, for me, I just feel that we don't talk about it because it just goes back to generations of upbringing, to misconceptions of shame instead of helping that person or helping that family or helping that individual. It's just something that's swept under the rug or talked about as if it's history when it can still be something that's current.
Yeah, yeah. The thing that I wonder about is maybe having to talk about it. First of all, it's not comfortable. And I want to tell you, and I don't mean this in any other way other than the highest respect, I really, really appreciate you talking as honestly and clearly about a very difficult situation and a very difficult topic. I think that's one reason why we don't want to deal with it, because it is so difficult. And the other thing is, if we start talking about it, we have to acknowledge that it actually exists, and it's not just on Law and Order or some television show or movie that we watch. It's right in people's homes.
I agree, and I think for some that's a reality that, again, it may be thought of, talked about in past tense, but it's just something that some people just don't want to deal with. I just have refused to let that capture my life and be caught in the moment, and I always tell children, male or female, you have to be careful. If you feel uncomfortable, even at the slightest bit, speak on it.
Mm-hmm.
Go somewhere where it's safety, and I don't care if it is someone that you know, because, again, often it is someone that may know you.
Yeah. What do you think about the culture? Now, I'm going to say culture because I tend to stay away from race because my heritage is so mixed up that if I picked one particular race, I would have to deny a lot of other parts of myself. But African-American, European-American, do you think there's a difference in the way they talk about it or don't talk about male rape, or do you think it's all pretty much the same?
I think it's about pretty much 50-50. I really do, because I know we're on the topic of rape, but there are so many other topics that in general, when you say culture and you said, we'll say African-American, there are so many other topics that are taboo, I guess that's the key word, that are just forbidden or just looked upon or frowned upon even to bring up at the slightest bit of a drop of a hat. And again, it's something that's swept on the side of the rug, but to bring it up in actual conversation brings about that fact that it's aware. And a lot of people often aren't aware, and that tends to be in our African-American homes, and that's very sad.
Well, here, this leads me to another question. When you started talking about it, what kind of reactions did you get from friends, family?
I've never told. As far as family is concerned, they never have, and I've never brought up the fact that I was molested as a child.
Uh-huh.
And as far as rape, there's very few and select family members that are aware that I was actually raped and had surgery and the whole shebang of that whole ordeal. So it is something that to many members of my family that are even passed away or are still present, they never know and they will never know.
Well, you know, sometimes, and I fall into this as well, into this category, sometimes we don't tell our family or people that we care about because we think we want to protect them from the knowledge.
That may actually be true. I mean, I have young individuals in my family, and I have older individuals, and I know I can feel it in my ear, so that if I ever put on the table things that have occurred in my past life, it would probably freak them out. And probably for some, it would probably confirm, oh, that's the way, that's why he is the way he is.
Hmm.
You know, so for me, it's a mixed bag of tricks. I know for my immediate family, that would just blow them away. And I just, because of the fact I feel like I've moved on. In fact, the only time I have a problem discussing it is when I'm getting myself involved in a new relationship.
Mm-hmm.
Because my outcome of being raped as a young adult, like I said, has actually led to me becoming HIV positive. So for me, I've learned again to once again be truthful, and when someone is entering my life and I know there's potential for furthering it along, I like to let them know what's up on the table. And sometimes that's very difficult, even though I know it's not my fault. For me, that's the only time I really have a problem really discussing it. And I do discuss this in front of groups and educators and doctors, but the only time it really becomes difficult is when I'm bringing someone new into my life and I put that on the table.
Yeah. I that's one of the reasons I purposely am not taking phone calls from callers from the outside, because one, I thought about doing this, and I said, well, you know, I could say people who are survivors can call, but I think that this is such an important topic that it's more important just to begin the discussion and talk about it in a way that makes sense, one, and in a way that isn't interrupted with outside agendas and outside phone calls. Does that make sense?
Yes, I do.
So one of the things that I've dealt with some difficult things as well in my life, and one of the things that I have learned is that the closer you are to the person, the more difficult it is to actually talk about things that are hurtful, which it took me a long time to figure that out, because you would think it would be the reverse, that the closer you are to a person, the easier it is to say, I was hurt, and I was hurt in this way, right? But that's, in my experience, that's not the case. And from my experience as a minister, I have found that people have the most trouble talking about what hurts them and what has hurt them to people who are the closest to them. That's where the most trouble is. And
absolutely, because there's a ripple effect, actually. For me, and maybe I'm trying to spare the other emotions that would ripple, that this ripple effect would encounter. I'm really trying to spare people of that ripple effect, because I kid you not, should I reveal one thing at least to the next, and I know people would be just like, oh, my God, you're lying. Well, not so much as that you're lying or I'm being untruthful. It's just like I know it would just open up a whole lot of other doors, and right now I just feel I'm at a point in my life where I've been blessed enough to move forward. I don't want to be taken back.
Yeah. That's an important topic, and that I would like for us to use that as a pivot to move into the conversation and move it into how you I want to talk to the people who are out there struggling with this type of experience, and they feel stuck, and they feel like there's no way out for them. They're right there in the middle of it, and they're sitting there in the middle of it, listening and wondering, how am I going to get through to the next day? So that's where I want to twist it around and turn it around and start talking about how first you, and as much as you feel comfortable sharing, and how in general people can find their way out.
You know, I can say for myself personally, going into my own experience, I did blame myself, but what helped me to eventually come out of that is to go back to my original train of thought, which meant I am a self-worthy person of love, and I did nothing to deserve the terrible thing that occurred.
I'm going to interrupt. Say that one more time.
Sure. For me, the first step was admitting, after blaming myself, was admitting to myself, you know what, I am still a person of self-worth, and I did nothing to bring upon the violent acts that occurred to me, whether it had been the incest that occurred as a young adult or the violent rape that occurred to me as in a young adult. So from adolescence, I had to come into that belief that get my mind back to square one, which was I am worthy and I did nothing wrong to bring those accidents or incidents onto me.
That is so, so important. And
that's what worked.
That is what we lose. That's what's taken from us when we're violated in that way. That sense of self-worth and worthiness is taken away.
Absolutely.
And sometimes we have to really work to get it back. And I think that is part of what is the excitement for someone who would do that kind of thing to another person, taking that sense of integrity, that sense of worthiness, that sense of I am special away from another person. That's what it is. So holding on to that is the way out. That's the doorknob. That's how I see it. Holding on, even if you don't really feel it inside, I tell people to say it. Look in the mirror and say it out loud. If you don't want to look in the mirror, sometimes you don't want to look in the mirror. Just say it, right?
Yeah. You need that kind of, I think it's called affirmation. You
need
that. You really, really do. And not only do you need to say it out loud, you need to go back to believing, because that is what we are raised as. I believe no matter what culture or race or whatever your heritage is, I believe our parents instill in us that you are a very worthy individual. You sometimes they say you are very special. And you need to hold on to the fact that I am special. Mm-hmm. No matter what your higher being is or what your belief is, you need to go back and say, you know what, I am still that special person that I started out to be. Even though this occurrence is bad, I did nothing wrong to be in that situation.
Exactly. And go ahead.
No, and whatever steps, and it's not always an instant kind of step.
No.
But at some point, I do know the key to healing is going to yourself and saying, you know what, I'm okay. I did nothing wrong, and I can go forth from this point. I can never forget what has occurred, and you never do. You never, ever occur, whether it's male or female, I'm pretty sure. You never forget, but you must give yourself the forgiveness and allow yourself to know that it's okay to move forward. You are old, and you are due that.
Yep, that's right. That
so
is sorry okay.
If my wording is a little slurred, but it can become very powerful and emotional for me, you know, and for me, that's very strong for me.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. And like I said again, I'm really glad that we're having this conversation. I really am. Because so many times when people are in their own pain, they feel, and I've been there too, you feel like you're the only person who is experiencing whatever it is you're experiencing. And to just know that there's one person out there who has gone through something like what you've gone through or are going through right now and come out on the other side,
right,
is enough.
And I think being a man still doesn't make me any lesser of a man because those incidents occurred to me. And for us guys or us men, we have to strongly believe that and go back to that. Just because something in that death has happened to us, it doesn't make us any less human or any less of a man. We are still men. I'm still a man.
That's one of the shows we're going to be doing later on about what exactly does it mean to be a man, you know? Our young people get so many different, especially today, they get so many different, I say, missed messages about gender and about what a man is and what it means to be a woman, what it means to be female, what it means to be male. I see young guys out there all the time with the what they call the maybe they don't call it now, but I know they used to call it the thug look, you know, rough and I'll beat you up or whatever look.
Right, and when you're ready to discuss that, we can definitely do it because you did say thug, and I think now it's under the misconception that our young people, our younger generation, they think that's urban, and that's so far from what urban is.
So you say a little more about that, you mind?
They also call it, or under the misconception, that the pants sagging down and this huge, tough macho look is also the urban style.
Mm.
And that's a huge misconception because that is not the urban style at all.
No. Yeah. And the music on top, I really have issues with the kind of music that's being pumped into our children's ears and into their minds and into their souls, that just with all these bad messages that they have, teaching them things that will only lead down roads that, for instance, here in Chicago, there was a young guy, high school kid who was beaten to death.
Yes.
Why? Because he didn't belong to a gang. He was trying to get decent grades in school, and they, as far as I can understand, they beat him to death. Other kids.
Right. All because one aspired to be a little higher than the rest, and there was nothing wrong with that.
So, that, we've talked about holding on to who you are and how important you are. What would you like to say to parents and teachers and people who are actually responsible for what is in a child's life? You really are responsible for that. Parents can say, well, I can't monitor my kid 24/7, but you're responsible for what that child is around, who that person's around, right? So what would you say to the parents and the teachers? And what would you like to see them do more?
I would actually
less?
Like to see them take back the control that parents had back in, as they say, the older days. We need more parents that aren't afraid to take control no matter what the, as they say, government says. You know, parents need to be involved, whether they are seen as hard parents or boring parents or unfashionable or lame or however the term that's out there now. Parents need to take more control of their children because, like you just said, we are responsible for our children. Whether it be your own child or back in the day, even if it was a neighbor's child, everyone looked out for the children because the children were our future. So whether it's a teacher or a parent, I think we just need to go back to being responsible as adults and reclaim that respect factor and make sure that it is instilled from one to the next and stay consistent no matter what the government says we're allowed to do and what we're not, because old ways worked. And that's what works for me.
That
we don't have less control, and we have so much less control because we're so worried about what DCFS or what the police may say that we are scared to put our foot down when our foot is necessary, and that's why these children are allowed to get out of hand so much, because if we don't stop it, who else is going to stop it? And then there are rules in the streets or at home. Which one would you rather have your child listen to?
Oh, say that again. I always do that. When something is like, say it again.
I just wanted to say that whether the rules are in the streets or the rules are in the home, which rules would you rather have your children adhere to?
Exactly. Oh, man, that is very, very well put, because you do have rules out in the street. I'm so glad you said that. And where? What rules? Which ones?
And that's absolutely right. Which ones would you rather have your children adhere to, the ones that you know are right or the ones that you know that could lead them to that road of a bullet, that road of a knife, that road of total disruption and just criminal behavior, and it leads to nowhere but death eventually, or that road to drugs? So I know what I would want my children, if I had children, what road I would rather them take, because I'd rather be seen as a lame, hard parent than a parent that doesn't care, because so many children out here just want that little bit of care. And they'd rather get it at home, but when they don't, they do turn to the streets. They do turn to the peers, and sometimes those peers aren't who you want your children to be with.
That's right. And the flip side of that is you can ask children. You can ask, okay, you don't like my rules in my home, in your home, where you're living, and you're nice and safe, and you get fed every day, and you get clothes, and you have your iPod or whatever. Then go out there and live on the streets and live and pay attention to those rules and see how you like them. You know, give them that choice. You know they're not going to make that choice, right?
It's a huge. And even for those, Deborah, actually, that do make that choice, they learn very quickly, like, oh, my God, what did I just do?
Yep. I know someone who raised a child, and this child was giving them a lot of trouble in high school. And she took her kid to a place that where kids who are truant and things like that, where they end up, and said, you know what, you keep acting like you're acting, this is where you're going to end up. Sort of like a scared straight type thing. And she said, you can either abide by my rules or you can end up here. And that was the end of the conversation. And sometimes
and for
we have
some,
to do
that's
that.
What it is. Yes. Yes. Some of them need a, what is it, a hard head, you know, makes a soft butt. Sometimes those kids need that because now they will test you. They will test you every day just to see how far you're willing to stick by what God has given us, which is our word. Mm-hmm. If we can't stick and believe in our word, we have nothing.
That's right. That is so right. That is so right. And the part of growing up is kids will test you. They will push the boundaries. And what the, when they're pushing, they want to find out where the boundary is. Where is the line? And if they never find it, they'll keep pushing.
They'll keep pushing. So
because
right.
Part of the reason they keep pushing is because they want to know where the line is. So I think you're dead on as far as how we need to change with the kids and the teachers and things like that. What would you say to someone who is who loves a person who's been raped or who wants to help that person or just even start a dialogue? What would help? What would work?
The thing that I would recommend is just remember that that's still a person. No matter if it's a male, if it's a female, it's a person. And that if they're going to trust you with such dire information and share that emotion with you, they are giving you a part of themselves that they're hoping that in the end of the conversation or during the conversation, you never lose focus that that is another person just simply asking to be accepted and loved and not rejected or basically be made to feel any lower.
Mm-hmm. And it's also a gift.
It's a huge gift because it's trust there. There is so much trust that someone divulging that much information, whether it be to help the next person or to further themselves in the relation that those two people are going about, there's trust there. But we never want to be seen as someone who is powerless or someone who is unhuman or just so unworthy.
Mm-hmm.
Or, and there's probably other words I could use, but right now I'm keeping it simple. We just want to be accepted and looked at as another person that did nothing wrong,
mm-hmm.
and we don't want to be blamed for that instance occurring to us.
That is so true. That is so true. Is there, before we go, we're going to wrap it up pretty soon. Is there anything that, anything else that you'd like to say or share anything like that?
Well, basically, again, I always want to thank you for giving people like us the opportunity for sharing such wonderful topics on your show. But it goes back to just your general audience. At some point, it's at some level in your life, if it has occurred to you, no matter what the level is, accept the fact that it's occurred to you, but forgive yourself enough to say that it was not your fault. You did nothing wrong. And whenever you're ready to talk about it, find someone that you feel that you can talk about it, even if it's in a closet to the man or whatever your entity is. Talk about it. Get it out so that you can move past it, because if you don't, you will be stuck. You will be stuck, and unfortunately, you won't really be able to move forward in your life because you'll always concentrate on what has happened in the past.
So
and you have to be willing to let go of that.
Yeah, part of letting go is being able to talk about it. Because one of the things I've found is that the more you talk about, not when you are able to verbalize something, you own it.
You do. You do.
It's yours.
And that's what I would say to your listeners out there, that at some point just realize you are still worthy of love, you're still worthy of living and having a good life, a great life, a full forward natural life. Even though something bad has come along, you just have to give yourself the strength to go forward and not blame yourself.
That's right. Well, thank you.
You're welcome. Enjoy your night.
I really appreciate you talking. And thank you for your courage, your honesty, and for being here, because you really are. You're a beautiful person. God bless
you. Thank you. Thank you very much. Enjoy, and enjoy your weekend.
All right. You too. You know, folks, these are very, very tough times. Money is tight. Jobs are disappearing and are gone. It's not safe for women. It's not safe for men. It's not safe for children. A lot of times we live in a hostile world that is touched here and there with the love and kindness that we show each other. Our children Our children live in these in the same world. They're children in this world. And it's up to us to respect and protect and teach each and every one of them. But you know what? The first thing we have to do is learn how to respect and protect and teach ourselves. We have to respect ourselves enough to turn off the music and the television programs and the movies that send all of these negative and disrespectful messages about how to be a woman or how to be a man. We have to learn how to be so that we can teach how to be. That's all I have for you tonight. This is All the Way In. That's it for today. Thanks for listening, and remember, live all the way in your life. Until next time, stay connected. Visit DeborahELake.com. And while you're there, sign up to follow us on Twitter. Or check out upcoming All the Way In programs. You'll even find free downloads of our previously recorded shows. You can find us on iTunes as well. If you have any questions or comments, send an email to alltheWayIn@DeborahELake.com. I'd love to hear from you. All the Way In is a production of Lake Enterprise.